eyes, clean-shaven face. Shouldn't the sight of the boy I spent 3 years with make my heart ache? But all I feel is annoyance.
Don't be mad,
he blurts out instead of saying hello. He's obviously picked up on my displeasure.
I know I shouldn't have shown up unannounced.
Then why did you?
Because you're not answering any of my texts.
He shakes his head angrily.
We were together almost 4 years, Allie. You can't even spare 5 minutes to talk to me.
I didn't have anything to say. I unlock my door and dump my bag in the hall. When Sean tries to follow me inside, I frown and grip the edge of the door to deny him entrance. He scowls.
What, I'm not allowed to come in now?
There's no reason for you to come in. Say whatever you need to say, Sean.
I'm not doing it out in the hall where the entire floor can hear me.
I draw a deep breath. I don't know why I'm being so harsh right now. Maybe because seeing him just reminds me of the fight that led to our breakup. All the unfair, insensitive, cruel words he'd hurled my way. I force myself to exhale. I'm probably being extra snippy because this evening's rehearsal sucked again. My breakneck pace on the treadmill hadn't helped either. Look, I desperately need a shower, so why don't I meet you at the coffee hut in 30 minutes? We can talk there. I can tell he's still upset I won't let him in, but he nods.
Fine. I could use a caffeine fix, I guess.
I nod back. I'll be there soon. Then I close the door and lean against it for a few seconds. Shit. I don't think I want to have this conversation, whatever it is. I wish Hannah were here so I could get her advice on how to handle this, but she's at rehearsal. With her showcase coming up, I doubt I'll be seeing much of her until the performance is out of her hair. In the shower, I remind myself that I broke up with Sean for a reason. Well, many reasons. We wanted different things from the future. I wasn't happy. He was angry all the time. Bottom line, it was too much heartache and not enough reward. I like to think my mom would agree with me on that. Yes, she'd urged me to work hard at relationships. And yes, relationships do require effort. But they shouldn't be hostile, right? I can't imagine what Sean could possibly say that would make me reconsider. Sean has snagged us a table in the back of the busy coffee shop, half hidden behind a huge ceramic planter with a fake fern fanning out of it. I don't quite understand the decor of this place. There are way too many plants. Are they going for a jungle theme? I don't care. I love the way it smells like freshly ground coffee beans, and I'm grateful for the privacy. Sean slides a tall foam cup closer to me.
I got you coffee.
He smiles wryly.
Vanilla latte with an extra shot of espresso.
This time, my heart does react accordingly, clenching hard. Of course he knows my coffee order. He knows everything about me, and vice versa. I don't need to peek in his cup to know he's drinking a medium roast, one cream, no sugar, and that the paper bag on the table contains a blueberry muffin, which is the only type of muffin he eats. When we were together, I forced him to try every muffin and pastry behind the counter, but he insisted that blueberry is the only flavor that enchants his taste buds. Fuck, now I'm just sad.
How have you been?
He asks quietly. Oh no, we're starting off with small talk. I wrap both hands around my cup to stop from fidgeting. All right. You?
Not the greatest, but...
He shrugs. I notice he looks tired. Is he not getting enough sleep? I bite back the question before it slips out. We're not together anymore. His sleeping habits are no longer my concern.
I miss you,
he mumbles. I hastily sip my coffee. I don't say it back, because the truth is, I don't miss him. Right after we broke up, sure, of course I did. But since then, I've had other things on my mind. The play, Dean. When I don't respond, he continues with a dejected look.
I've been doing a lot of thinking since you ended it. A lot of soul searching. I finally find my voice.
That's good. I'm glad.
I was thinking back to the last 6 months, and I realized how badly I screwed up. I was such an ass to you, Allie.
His expression is earnest.
But now I know why.
My throat tightens. Why?
Because I was scared.
Oh, shit. There's vulnerability swimming in his eyes. I battle the overwhelming urge to reach across the table and squeeze his hand. It's not my job to take care of him anymore.
You've had your entire future planned out since you were 12. You knew exactly what you wanted to do, and that's so fucking rare. Not a lot of people can say that.
His tone grows rueful.
I sure as hell can't. I didn't grow up dreaming about working for my dad's insurance company.
But it's a guaranteed job, and not a lot of people have that, especially coming out of college. But it's not like I've been chomping at the bit to go back to Vermont.
You sure made it sound like you were, I point out.
Because it's the only option I have.
He sounds frustrated.
I was trying to get myself excited about it. And honestly, picturing you there with me made the idea of going home more bearable. An easier pill to swallow, I guess. But it wasn't fair to you. I had no right to insist that you sacrifice the future you want just so I could feel better about the future I'm stuck with.
I'm dumbfounded. Sean hadn't given any indication that he didn't want to be in Vermont, but I suppose that's yet another sign of the communication breakdown between us.
You told me on our very first date that you planned on moving to LA after graduation. You kept telling me that up until the moment we broke up.
He shakes his head, shamefaced.
But this summer, I decided not to hear it anymore. I convinced myself that I was the most important thing in your life, and you'd go wherever you had to in order to be with me.
That's not a fair expectation to have of anyone, I say softly. You can't order someone to put your happiness ahead of their own.
I know, and I was wrong to give you an ultimatum. I told you, I've been doing a lot of thinking.
He takes a breath.
I came to a few conclusions.
My stomach drops when he sticks one hand in his jacket pocket. Oh, dear God, please don't let him pull out a velvet jeweler's box. Is it crazy that I almost wish he's going for a gun? That he plans on holding everyone hostage until I agree to get back together with him? For some screwed-up reason, I think I'm better equipped to handle that than a proposal. But his hand emerges with a narrow envelope. He sets it on the tabletop. What's that? I stare at the envelope as if it contains anthrax.
Open it, he urges.
Fuckity fuck.
Please?
The sincerity in his tone causes me to cave. I pick up the envelope. It's sealed, but the flap is tucked in, so I use my fingernail to pry it out. I peek inside and see a single sheet of paper, which I extract and unfold as I fight my growing trepidation. Shock hits me first, followed by suspicion, followed by deep distress, because what the heck am I supposed to say to this? I'm staring at a confirmation receipt for 2 airline tickets to Los Angeles, California. The flight departs the day after graduation. I bite my lip and lift my gaze to Sean's.
You and me, baby, he says fervently. This is what I should have done in the first place. It was stupid to try and force you to move to Vermont. What I needed to do was swallow my pride and move to LA with you.
Oh, God. Why did I insist on meeting in public? Public is bad. Public means everyone is about to witness Sean's agony and humiliation when I say, no. Uncertainty passes over his face.
What?
You're not coming to LA with me. Sean's mouth opens, then closes, then opens again. I give him a moment to digest what I just said. Unfortunately, it's the same moment my phone buzzes. I dig around in my purse and,
Wonderful. A text from Dean. Him.
Game's done. Hurricane's rocked it like a hurricane. Bo can't meet up till later. Quickie.
God, I wish. Me. Can't, in the middle of something brutal over here.
Why not?
Sean finally asks. Because I'm distracted. Him.
Everything okay?
Me. Yeah, having coffee with Sean. There's an interminably long delay. Sean is still waiting for me to answer. I'm waiting for Dean to answer. I realize I probably shouldn't have said anything to Dean, but I'd been typing on autopilot. He comes back with,
WTF.
Me. I know. Sigh. I'll explain everything later, okay? There's no response after that, and Sean is looking increasingly irritated.
Who are you texting?
He demands. Hannah? I lie. The worst part about dating someone for as long as I dated Sean? They always know when you're lying.
Bullshit.
Anger infuses his eyes, dark and fierce.
Is it that guy? The one you slept with?
No, it's not. This time, I don't care if he sees through the lie. And even if it was, it's none of your business. We're broken up. I take a breath. And that's the reason you can't come to LA with me. Sean's mouth flattens. His face and neck take on a deep flush. Even the tips of his ears are red.
You don't mean that.
Yes, I do. I'm sorry. I just think it's time we moved on from each other.
Move on from each other or move on to other people?
His snotty tone raises my hackles.
Like this guy whose name you won't tell me.
I could be a jerk and toss out another, it's none of your business. I could also philosophize and give him the whole, if you love someone, let them go spiel. I do neither. I simply slide the tickets toward him and say, I'm sorry. I hope you're able to get a refund for these. And I really hope you figure out what your passion is, whether it's working for your dad or doing something else. Damn it, I'm choking up. I really do want the best for you, Sean. I want you to be happy. He doesn't answer. He sits there, stone-faced. I scrape my chair back. My hands shake as I put on my coat. I don't bother telling him we can still be friends because I know he doesn't want to hear that right now. Besides, I'm not about to make any promises I might be unable to keep. Bye, Sean, I say softly. 24 hours after my heartbreaking encounter with my ex-boyfriend, it becomes glaringly obvious that Dean is giving me the silent treatment. I texted him after I left the coffee house, asking if he still wanted to meet up. No answer. I texted again later to ask if he went out with Bo. No answer. I texted to say goodnight. No answer. I texted to say good morning. No answer. Now, as I sit on my bed, home alone on a Saturday night, I'm finding it hard to cut Dean any slack. Last night, I was fully willing to take responsibility. Of course, Dean had assumed the worst when he found out I was with Sean, and I don't blame him for getting pissy about it. A few hours of sulking is a perfectly reasonable reaction to thinking I might have gotten back together with my ex. But 24 hours? That's bullshit. If Dean is mad at me, fine, let him be mad. If he's done with me, fine, I guess he's done. At least have the balls to tell me. Ignoring someone until they get the hint is downright insulting, and I don't have patience for that. I grab my laptop from the nightstand because I desperately need a distraction right now, and nothing is more distracting than watching adorable videos on YouTube. Hopefully there's a baby giraffe out there that decided to cough, or a baby hippo that felt like splashing around in a pond. Somehow, I end up on Twitter. And gee, look at that, Dean is alive. Now he can't use I was dead as an excuse for why he's snubbing me, because a Breyer student is live-tweeting tonight's home game and just mentioned a De Laurentiis goal. I close the browser and hop off the bed. Maybe I'm a masochist, but seeing Dean's name makes me want to see Dean. I want answers, damn it. I want him to look me in the eye and tell me if the fling is over. It takes me nearly 30 minutes to walk to the arena, which is on the opposite end of Breyer's huge campus. At the ticket booth, I flash my student ID to get the discount rate. The student teller says, "Standing room only," as she slides a ticket under the glass. A minute later, I'm in the area reserved for standing patrons. The second period just started. I peer at the ice, trying to remember Dean's jersey number. My mind draws a blank, so instead, I scan the names on the back of the black and silver jerseys. Dean's surname contains so many letters it should be easy to spot. But nope, I'm not seeing him on the ice. Maybe his line isn't playing right now? But he doesn't seem to be sitting on the home bench either. Weird. On a whim, I open Twitter on my phone and search for the profile I was following earlier. Maybe at BriarBrian38 tweeted some updates when I was walking over. I skim the most recent posts until one catches my eye. My heart promptly lurches to my throat. Dean was thrown out of the game.
Chapter 20. Dean. I sit in the empty locker room, head down, shoulders hunched, valiantly trying not to grab the nearest item, which happens to be my helmet, and hurl it at the wall. The knuckles of my right hand are cracked and bleeding thanks to the violent uppercut I unleashed at the St. Anthony's forward, but I press my palms against my thighs and let the blood soak into my hockey pants. I despise those fuckers from St. Anthony's. Our teams are longtime rivals, so whenever we play each other, tension and smack talk are to be expected. But the hostility has gotten worse over the past 2 years. And a couple of weeks ago, a bunch of St. A's guys had messed with one of Grace's friends, taking away her phone and refusing to let her leave their seedy motel room. Tonight, I'm the one at fault. There was the usual trash talk in the face-offs, aggressive skating, overly physical hits on both sides. But I was already hot-tempered going into this game, and when that asshole goaded me into taking a swing, I just lost it. They tossed me out for unsportsmanlike conduct. Yeah, right. If the refs heard even half the filth Connolly was spewing about our mothers, they'd throw the fucker out too. As it stands, I'm the only ousted player. One punch thrown in an already heated game probably won't get me a suspension from the team. But now I'm stuck in the locker room, prohibited from leaving until I get the obligatory tongue lashing from Coach Jensen. Or maybe he'll delegate again and let O'Shea deliver the lecture. Lucky me. That would mean two lectures from that bastard in the span of 24 hours. He'd called me into his office last night when I was driving home from the Hurricanes game. Add to that Allie's admission that she was with her ex, and it's no surprise I ended up getting trashed with Beau. I swear to God, if Allie got back together with that undeserving ass, I'm going to... what? Lose it again? Break up with her? All I've done so far is avoid her, big talker that I am. Truthfully, I'm afraid of what she might say. Footsteps echo beyond the door. I instantly tense. Wait, it's the wrong door, I realize. Not the one leading out to the ice, but the one that opens to the main hallway. Dean? Allie's voice has my head snapping up. How the hell did she get back here? We have security guards manning the facility during home games to prevent people from stealing into the locker rooms and messing with the equipment. That actually happened a couple years ago. A rabid fan of our opponents snuck in and spray-painted loser on our lockers. I hadn't realized some colleges let in five-year-olds. There's a soft knock. Dean, are you in there? I answer on a ragged breath. Yeah. Allie pokes her blonde head in the room. She spots me on the bench and makes a beeline toward me. She's in jeans and a red sweater, with her hair up in a messy bun, and either I'm imagining it, or her eyes are rimmed with red. Has she been crying? How'd you get past security? I asked gruffly. I told the guard I'm your girlfriend and that I desperately needed to check on my man. There may have been some crocodile tears involved. She grins wryly. The ability to cry on command really comes in handy sometimes. Andy bought it. Yep, I'm very convincing. But I did have to show him my Briar ID to prove I wasn't a saboteur. She sits beside me. Why did you get kicked out of the game? I stare straight ahead. I sucker punched someone. Damn foolish on my part. I deserve to be in here. Maybe, but it still sucks. She goes quiet for a moment. I can feel her blue eyes boring into the side of my face. You're avoiding me? I glance over. Just a bit. A bit? There aren't degrees of avoidance, Dean. You're either avoiding someone or you aren't. Not true. Sometimes they're extenuating circumstances, unexpected variables. Like what? I shrug. Doesn't matter. It does matter, she corrects. But we can put a pin in that for the moment. She presses one hand against my cheek, then slides it to my chin to twist my head toward her, forcing eye contact. I know you're pissed at me for seeing Sean.
I'm not pissed. You can see whoever you want.
I put on an indifferent tone, when inside I'm bristling.
But let me just point out the hypocrisy of that. Weren't we supposed to give each other a heads up before we hooked up with anyone else?
I didn't hook up with him.
No?
No, she says in a firm voice. And if your silent treatment also has to do with you thinking Sean and I got back together, I can assure you we did not. He wanted to, but I said no. I can't explain the gust of relief that slams into my chest.
Good to know,
I say lightly. But the knowing gleam in her eyes reveals she's absolutely aware of how pleased I am. She takes my hand and twines our fingers together. Sean and I are over. I don't want to be with him, and that's exactly what I told him yesterday.
Betty wasn't thrilled to hear it.
No, but it's something he'll need to accept. She rubs her thumb over my tender knuckles. They're not bleeding anymore, but the way she gasps, you'd think my hand had been amputated. You shouldn't be fighting, she says sternly.
Hockey players are hot-blooded, babe. We fight sometimes. Not the end of the world.
What did the jerk say to get you to punch him?
I don't even remember, I admit. It was all a blur, and I was already in a shitty mood to begin with.
Guilt fills her expression. Because of me?
Nah. My fingers tighten through hers. O'Shea's on my case again because another goddamn picture showed up on Instagram. I chuckle harshly. I really need to start paying more attention when I'm at Malone's.
O'Shea is your assistant coach? The one who forced you to volunteer at the middle school?
Defensive coordinator, and yes.
Okay, and what picture are we talking about? Wait, a picture from Malone's? Of us?
Her face goes pale. No, I assure her. Me and Penelope, the puck bunny who was chewing on my neck. O'Shea is pissed.
Why? Are PDAs forbidden?
She quickly adds. Not that I'm saying you were PDAing with her. I know she was the one coming on to you, but for argument's sake, even if you were reciprocating, how is that a punishable offense? He wasn't bitching about the PDA. I'm holding a beer in the picture, and O'Shea's got a stick up his ass about us not drinking.
He realizes he's coaching college players, right? A no drinking rule is impossible to enforce.
I know.
And all you're doing in the picture is holding a beer? What the hell? It's not like you got caught snorting lines of coke off her tits.
A smile tickles my lips. Of course not. If I was going to snort lines off anyone's tits, it would be yours.
Aw, thanks. That's so romantic.
Still stroking my palm with her fingertips, she leans closer and kisses my cheek.
O'Shea is an idiot, sweetie. Don't let him get to you, okay? Especially not to the point where you're so angry you're punching people and getting thrown out of games.
She's right. I do need to do a better job of controlling my temper. But Frank O'Shea... Fuck, just the sound of his sharp, condescending voice riles me up. Allie's lips brush over my jaw in a fleeting kiss. Then she releases my hand, visibly reluctant.
I should probably go before someone sees me in here. The third period will be over soon.
Did you happen to catch the score before you came back here?
I think it was tied.
Shit. Well, hopefully my boys managed to turn the tie into a lead because I'm sick to death of losing. And I'm sick of sneaking around, if I'm being honest. It was exciting at first, sleeping with Allie behind our friends' backs. But I'm not feeling it anymore. When she showed up at Malone's the other night looking like that, I wanted to stick my tongue down her throat in front of everyone. It was damn hard pretending to be unaffected by her. And I'm damn tired of furtively texting her for quickies and lying to my friends about where I'm going. Friends who, by the way, now think I incorporate dildos into my jerk-off routine. When Tucker handed me a plate of bacon and eggs this morning, he innocently asked if my little pink buddy would be joining us for breakfast. Garrett almost broke a rib laughing. Poor Grace still can't look at me without blushing. I know Allie doesn't want our friends to know we're fooling around, but I wish there was a way we could have a little more freedom. Maybe we could book a hotel room for the weekend. Just spend 2 whole days in bed without worrying about... Inspiration strikes. Hey, wait. I reach for her hand before she can stand up. Did you book your train ticket for Thanksgiving yet? Allie curses. No, I didn't. Ugh. Why am I so bad at remembering things? I set a reminder. Don't book it. Why not? Because I have a better idea? I hesitate. Why don't I come to New York with you? We can drive up in my car. She looks startled. Oh, you, want to spend Thanksgiving together? Well, I'm seeing my dad. I'm not inviting myself to dinner or anything, I cut in. I figured I'd stay at my place in Manhattan while you're with your dad, and if you're free Thursday or Friday night, you can come over. I wiggle my eyebrows. We'd have the whole place to ourselves. Well, that's intriguing, she says slowly. When do you need to be back at Briar for the game? I'd have to leave Saturday morning. When were you planning on coming back? Saturday morning. A tiny smile lifts her lips. Timing works out. Does that mean you're down? I ask hopefully. A free ride to New York and wild weekend sex? Of course. Good. I have one favor to ask, though. She tips her head, waiting for me to continue. My mood, which had been lower than low before, is now as bright as the grin I flash her. Bring Winston. And that's how I end up driving to New York with Allie in the passenger seat. The sun is already set by the time we hit the road, because Allie had rehearsal until 6, and then it takes her a whole frickin' hour to pack. Me, I bring a backpack. Her... She brings an overstuffed suitcase that barely fits in my trunk. I had left my hockey bag in there because it literally didn't occur to me that she'd pack so much shit for 3 short days. Luckily, the parking lot behind Bristol is completely deserted, which means nobody sees us trying to jam the suitcase in the trunk. The campus is eerily silent, almost as if the rapture sucked everybody up into the sky. Clearly, we're not the only ones who decided to head out the day before Thanksgiving. Hannah and Garrett flew to Philly this morning, and Grace and Logan were gone a few hours later. They're visiting Logan's father in rehab, then hitting up his mother in Boston for the night before coming back to Hastings to spend the holiday with Grace's dad. Tucker was still home when I left, but he's driving to Hollis's place in New Hampshire tomorrow morning. I'm glad because if he didn't have anywhere to go, the guilt would have suckered me into inviting him to Manhattan. After Allie and I are finally settled in the front seat, I discover that we have completely different tastes in music. It takes about 5 minutes of bickering before we reach a compromise. We each get 30-minute music blocks, during which the other person isn't allowed to complain. The little brat even sets a timer to ensure we abide by the rules. And of course, she announces she's going first. Why can't I go first? I object. Because I'm playing the vagina card. I smirk at her. Fine, then I trump it with the penis card. That's not how it works. She sounds exasperated. Then how does it work? Because last I checked, genitals don't decide who gets to listen to their music first. Oh, yes, they do. Allie addresses me like I'm a kindergartner. See, if you take away my dick privileges, I'll be fine for months, years even. But if I take away your pussy privileges... You'll be utterly lost, like a drowning man at sea desperately grabbing for the vagina preserver. She beams. Therefore, vagina trumps penis. My smirk fades, because she's right. As a result, I spend the first 30 minutes of the drive listening to cheesy 80s ballads that all feature the word love in their titles. I want to know what love is. I just called to say I love you. It must have been love. You'd think Allie was not so subtly trying to tell me something, except I'm fairly certain every song from the 80s is about love. When it's my turn, I pick the filthiest tracks I can find. Old Dirty Bastard, some non-radio-friendly Jay-Z, Cypress Hill. I even throw an Insane Clown Posse song in there. Allie retaliates by putting on Madonna's Greatest Hits. Instead of punishing her, I decide to reward myself and switch from hip-hop to country. Yep, rich boy likes Tim McGraw, so sue me. We're still on the I-90 with about 2 hours left to go when Allie pulls out her phone and starts typing. Keeping my eyes on the road, I ask, "Who you texting?" "Dylan, a friend from high school. She goes to college in Florida, but I'm hoping she's coming home for the break." "Oh, and I should check if Fletch is around." "Fletch?" "Kyle Fletcher, but I call him Fletch," she says absently. "Ex-boyfriend." My head swivels toward her. "You're making plans with your ex-boyfriend?" "Retract those claws, Missy. Fletch is a good friend of mine." I can't fight my curiosity. "How long were you together?"
"3 years."
I whistle softly. "And then 3.5 more with Sean? You're a nester, huh?"
"No, I'm not," she protests.
"Babe, that's almost 7 years of your life spent in a serious relationship, and you're only 22.
21. I'm a Christmas baby.
"For real? Your birthday's the 25th?
The 24th. I guess that makes me a Christmas Eve baby. Sorry.
"You better be sorry. How dare you mislead me like that?" She rolls her eyes.
"Anyway, fine. You're right. That is a long time."
She pauses.
"What's your longest relationship?"
"A little over a year," I answer without moving my gaze from the dark highway.
"Really?"
she says in surprise.
"That's a lot longer than I expected. High school?"
I nod.
"Why'd you break up?"
It's my turn to roll my eyes. "Because we were in high school?"
"So, what if she was your soulmate?" Allie challenges. "You don't believe high school sweethearts can make it?"
"Nope. I don't think you're capable of knowing what you want or need from a relationship at that age. When you're in high school, you have no concept of real life. You don't realize how much growing up you still have to do. I'm definitely not the same person now that I was in my teens. Hell, I'm not the same person I was last semester."
"Sure you are," she smiles sweetly. "You were a man whore last semester, and you're a man whore this semester."
"True," I say with a snicker. Allie drops her phone in the cup holder and shifts around in her seat so she can see me better.
"Do you still talk to your high school girlfriend?"
Tension slices into my bones. "No."
"You just lost touch?"
"I guess you could say that." I exhale slowly, hoping to ease the tightness in my chest. "She's the reason Coach O'Shea hates me, actually. Miranda's his daughter."
"Uh-oh, you dated your coach's daughter?"
Allie takes on a chiding tone.
"Oh, sweetie, that's like rule number one in the dating handbook. Never date the kid of your authority figure."
"Do I look like someone who follows the rules?" My answering grin fades rapidly. "I couldn't help it," I admit. "At the time, Miranda was pretty friggin' awesome. Impossible to resist. She attended Greenwich Prep for free because Frank coached there, so she wasn't a rich kid. She was completely different from the girls I'd always gone to school with. She didn't give a shit about image or being the queen bee. Didn't shame other people to make herself feel better. She was down to earth. Funny. Hot."
"Well, duh. Dean Hayward De Laurentiis only bangs hotties."
"I didn't bang her. At least not right away. Took a long time to get there, but I wasn't in any hurry." I wink. "We had fun doing other stuff."
"So when did you do the deed?"
"A couple months before we broke up." My shoulders stiffen again. I hate thinking about that night. Allie senses it because her tone becomes wary.
"What happened?"
"Fuck, why did I even open this door?" "About 9 months into the relationship, things got intense." And why am I even answering the question? Miranda started talking about us staying together when we went to college, which was never part of the deal.
"Wait, did O'Shea know at this point that you were dating his daughter?"
"Yeah, he knew. He wasn't thrilled, but he said as long as Miranda was happy, he was happy. Didn't stop him from giving me grief about it, though. I'd pick her up for a date and he'd interrogate me about where we were going, who would be there, and when we'd be back. And one time he threatened to shoot my balls off if I didn't treat her with respect."
"My father gave Fletch the same speech when we started dating. Trust me, it's a dad thing."
Allie's laughter dies off.
So Miranda was talking about college?
All the time, and it really fucking worried me because we were on the same page going into the relationship. I didn't want to do the long distance thing in college. I saw my brother and his ex-girlfriend go through it, same with a few buddies who graduated the year before. They spent their freshman year holding on to something they should have just let go. The phone calls got less frequent, the visits stopped, the jealousy and insecurity set in. Worrying about what the other person was up to, who they might be hooking up with. I didn't want that, and neither did Miranda. She was planning on going to Duke, I was planning on Breyer or Harvard. We both agreed that if we were still together by the time graduation rolled around, we would end it.
But she changed her mind?
Yeah. It was subtle at first. She'd talk about something we were going to do in the future. I'd remind her it probably wouldn't happen, and she'd laugh it off and say she forgot. But then she got clingy. She'd call like 10 times a day, and suddenly she was paranoid I was cheating on her. I wasn't, by the way. I've never cheated on anyone I made a commitment to.
So you ended it?
No, wait, first you had sex with her. I hear the accusation in Allie's tone, and I can't deny it hits its mark. Yeah, I did. My mouth runs dry. I try to swallow. Miranda was with this other guy for 2 years before she went out with me. When we started dating, she told me she'd had sex before.
Oh no, Allie murmurs. I don't like where this is going.
We were at a party, and she was acting all clingy again, not letting me talk to anyone, refusing to let go of my hand. She even followed me into the fucking bathroom. I was frustrated and angry, and I started pounding beers because it was the only way to pass the time. She didn't want to leave, but she also wouldn't leave my side. I was actually considering breaking up with her right then, and I guess she sensed it because next thing I know, she's dragging me upstairs. Regret throbs inside me. I was disgustingly wasted, not to mention 17 and horny, so I wasn't exactly fighting her off. We had sex, and then afterwards, she admitted she was a virgin. Shit. If I'd known, I would have been more, I don't know, careful, gentler. I was sloppy drunk, and she got a sloppy lay for her first time, Allie. I felt like a total ass the next day. But Miranda wasn't mad. She said she felt closer to me than ever. And after that, it was like DEFCON level clinginess. Suddenly she was planning college visits and saying how we should think about getting engaged, that a stronger commitment would make it easier to stay true to each other. My stomach churns just thinking about it. I hadn't even turned 18 at that point. So like any teenage boy would, you freaked out and ended it. I nod. She sighs. I don't blame you. I'm sure anyone would feel overwhelmed in that situation. Maybe, but Miranda didn't handle the breakup too well, I confess, fighting the nausea clawing at my gut. Turns out she'd dealt with depression in the past, but she never told me about it. I never would have guessed either because she was so happy and easygoing all the time. But I found out that's because of the meds she was taking, the meds she stopped taking after I ended it. Shit, Allie says again. She changed completely. She was crying all the time, screaming at me in the halls, calling me in the middle of the night, threatening to kill herself. I had no choice but to involve her dad because I was terrified she might actually commit suicide. Frank pulled her out of school after that, and I haven't seen or heard from her since. Allie's jaw drops. Are you serious? Frank wouldn't allow it. The frustration I felt back then rises again now. He told me Miranda was back on her meds and getting professional help. Oh, and that if I ever tried to contact her again, he would rip my throat out. That didn't stop me from worrying about her. I mean, I still cared about her even though we were broken up, so about a month after she left school, I cornered Coach in the parking lot and demanded to see Miranda. My jaw twitches, and he punched me in the face. Oh my God, did anyone see him do it? No, it was late and he was coming out of a staff meeting. Nobody else was around. But yeah, he clocked me good. That's when I found out that Miranda told him we had sex. She also told him I was drunk out of my mind when it happened. Well, that's not cool, Allie says angrily. None of it was cool. I shouldn't have let her seduce me that night, absolutely. Bitterness clogs my throat. But she let her father believe I was some drunk asshole who took advantage of her, and that wasn't fair either. I force myself to relax my grip on the steering wheel. Anyway, that's why O'Shea can't stand the sight of me. He thinks I played the long game with his daughter, spent a year trying to get into her pants, and then dumped her once I got what I wanted.
And you really have no idea how she's doing now? You haven't tried to contact her?
I sent her a Facebook friend request a while ago, I admit. She hasn't accepted it. I think she's doing well, though. Her profile said she goes to Duke.
I guess it makes sense that O'Shea was so overprotective of her, Allie muses. It must have been really hard for him, watching his daughter struggle with depression, watching her get better and then fall into that dark place again.
Maybe, but I refuse to empathize with that bastard, not when he's trying to make my last year at Briar so damn miserable.
You make more sense to me too now, she adds.
How so?
I don't like her thoughtful, probing gaze. This is why you're so upfront about sex, right? You're making sure your hookups are on the same page as you.
I'm not misleading anyone ever again, that's for sure. Or taking their agreement at face value. I don't care if it makes me an ass, but I never, ever lie about my intentions. And I never date virgins, I say as an afterthought. Or freshmen, because they tend to be clingier.
The life of Dean sure has a lot of rules.
Without those rules, there is no life of Dean.
I suppose, she pauses. The virgin thing is tough, though. It's easy for a girl to lie about that. I mean, horseback riding alone has probably broken 50% of hymens.
I bark out a laugh. Trust me, my virgin radar is infallible these days.
Oh, yeah? How did you know I wasn't a virgin?
Because Garrett stays at your dorm every other weekend and he heard you and Sean in the bone zone tons of times. He told me you were a screamer.
She gasps. He did not say that.
He totally did. Face it, babe, you're a loud lay. I chuckle at her stricken expression. It's not a bad thing. Vocal is good. I think of her throaty moans and breathy, oh my gods, and I'm semi-hard in a nanosecond. Vocal is very good.
No, it's embarrassing, she mutters. Her cheeks are bright red.
Hey, I'd way rather be in bed with a loud woman than a quiet one. Silent comers are the worst. I slept with this one chick who didn't make a sound the entire time. Seriously, I had no idea if she was even enjoying herself. And then when it was over, she turned to me and thanked me for the multiple orgasms.
Allie lets out a hoot. You're lying.
I don't lie.
You really don't, huh? I'm starting to think you might be the most honest person I've ever met.
Another requirement in the life of Dean. Say what you mean what you say.
And do what you want.
And do what you want, I echo.
I think I really like the life of Dean.
I think I really like you, I almost blurt out. Fortunately, I managed to tamp down the sentiment, because, what the hell, I like banging her. Allie is easy to talk to and fun to fuck. That's all there is to it. And considering how adamant she is about this being nothing more than a fling, I know she agrees wholeheartedly with me on that. But a few hours later, when I pull up in front of a 3-story brownstone in Brooklyn Heights, Allie throws me a curveball.
Do you want to come for dinner tomorrow?
The invitation is alarming and unexpected. And alarming. Did I mention alarming? My unease must be written all over my face because Allie hurries on.
I won't be insulted if you say no. Honestly, you can say no. I was just imagining you all alone in Manhattan for Thanksgiving while your family is scarfing down a tropical turkey in St. Bart's. And it was such a lonely, depressing picture that I figured I'd extend the invite.
What? I clear my throat. What will you tell your dad?
She shrugs. I'll say you're a friend from school who didn't have anywhere else to go. It won't be a big deal, I promise. You guys will talk hockey. I'll cook dinner. We'll watch some football, and there's a 40% chance we all get food poisoning. Just a regular old Hayes family Thanksgiving.
A laugh flies out. Sounds like a blast. I consider it. Okay, I'm in. What time do you want me to show up?
4 should be good, but we probably won't eat until 5.
I nod.
Okay, awesome.
She smiles ruefully.
Now help me get my suitcase out of the trunk, will you? I'm pretty sure I'll break my back if I try to lift that thing myself.
Chapter 21. Dean.
Allie's father hates me on sight. I'm sure if I mentioned it to Allie, she'd wave off my concerns and say things like, he's just grumpy, or, oh, that's just how he is with everyone. But she'd be wrong. Joe Hayes hates me from the moment he opens the door and sees me standing on the stoop. And whoo boy, don't I feel overdressed. Allie told me to dress nice. So I'd chosen a white Tom Ford dress shirt and gray Armani trousers. No suit coat. But my black Ralph Lauren jacket gets an elbow flick from Allie's dad, who's in sweatpants and a flannel shirt.
You AJ's friend from school?
He barks. I wrinkle my brow.
AJ? My daughter, Allison Jane.
Mr. Hayes looks annoyed that he has to explain.
Yes, sir. I know her as Allie, though.
And you didn't know her nickname?
He makes a derisive sound. Not much of a friend, are you?
He mutters.
Come in.
He turns around stiffly. Stiff in the literal sense, because his gait is visibly labored as he stumbles forward on a slender cane. Allie had warned me that her father has MS. She also advised me not to bring it up in conversation, saying he doesn't like talking about it and will most likely bite my head off if I mention it. So I don't. But it's clear, even with my non-medical background, that he's in pain right now. I follow Mr. Hayes through a surprisingly large main floor with gleaming hardwood and what looks like the original woodwork and doors from whenever this brownstone was built. Allie and her dad have the two lower floors, which I'm brusquely told contain 4 bedrooms and 3 baths. Either the family purchased the apartment before the Brooklyn Heights neighborhood became super exclusive, or pro hockey scouts make way more money than I thought. He leads me into a spacious living room with a bay window that overlooks a neatly tended garden and patio.
Do you garden?
I ask politely. Allie's dad scowls at me.
Woman upstairs takes care of the garden.
Okay then.
Dean, hey.
Oh, thank Christ. Allie pops into the room, and I'm relieved to see she's wearing a knee-length blue dress. Not a fancy one, but nice enough that I no longer feel like I showed up to a potluck in a tuxedo. You want anything to drink? She asks after she greets me with a quick hug. I glance at the brown leather couch that Mr. Hayes is slowly lowering himself on. He tucks the cane on the edge of the sofa and snatches a beer from the coffee table. His hand trembles wildly as he raises the bottle to his lips. When he catches me staring, he scowls again.
I gulp. Beer would be nice.
Coors or Bud?
Bud.
She nods. Coming right up.
I'm once again left alone in the clutches of Mr. Hayes, whose blue eyes are now glued to the Lions game flashing on the flat screen. I've got about 5 inches and 30 pounds on the man, but he still fucking terrifies me. I suspect he was a bruiser when he played hockey. He's got that stocky barrel chest and the surly attitude.
What are you waiting for, pretty boy? Sit down already.
Pretty boy? God damn it, why did I show up in Ford and Armani? Allie's dad probably took one look at my expensive getup and decided I was a rich prick. Very reluctantly, I sit on the other end of the sectional. Mr. Hayes glances over briefly.
AJ says you play hockey?
Yes, sir.
Forward?
Defenseman.
What are your stats so far this season?
I pause uncertainly. Wait, does he expect me to rattle off actual numbers, like goals and assists and penalty minutes? I could probably ballpark it, but reciting my own statistics feels pompous.
They're decent, I say vaguely. The team's had a rocky start. We won the Frozen Four last season, though.
He nods.
Won it junior year, Boston College.
Nice. Congrats. His face is utterly expressionless, so I can't be sure if this is some kind of pissing match. If so, I could probably mention I won it the year before, too. But I keep my mouth shut. Luckily, Allie is back with my beer, and I reach for it as if it's a life preserver.
Thanks, babe.
We both freeze the moment the endearment leaves my mouth. Shit, I hope Mr. Hayes didn't hear that. He's sitting right here, of course he heard. I twist off the bottle cap and take a much-needed swig of alcohol.
So, what did I miss?
Allie says in an overly cheerful voice. Her father scoffs.
Pretty boy over here was just telling me how he won the Frozen Four.
Fucking hell. This is going to be a long Thanksgiving. Dinner is awful. Well, not the food. For someone who claims to suck at cooking, Allie did a pretty good job with the meal. It's the act of eating said food that I find excruciating. The conversation is brutal. Mr. Hayes seems to be going out of his way to antagonize me. His preferred phrase of the evening is, "Of course," except it's spoken in a flat, condescending tone that makes me wish I was spending Thanksgiving in the empty house in Hastings. When Allie tells him I'm going to law school next fall, he says, "Of course." When she mentions my family owns a place in Manhattan, he says, "Of course." When I thank him for having me to dinner, he says, "Of course." Goddamn brutal. Don't get me wrong, I'm making a genuine effort to be polite. I ask him what it was like to be a pro scout, but all I get is a half-mumbled, one-sentence response. I compliment him on how nice this brownstone is, and he grunts out a thank you. Eventually, I give up, but Allie is more than happy to fill the awkward silence. As she tells her father about the plays she's acting in, her courses, her upcoming auditions, and everything else she has going on, that's the only time Mr. Hayes seems to come to life. It's obvious he loves his daughter deeply, and he hangs on to every word she says like she's offering him the secrets to eternal life. He does scowl at her once, though, after he asks if she's still in touch with Sean, and she admits they had coffee.
"Never liked that boy," Mr. Hayes mutters.
For once, he and I are on the same page. Allie chews her last bite of gravy-laden mashed potatoes before voicing a protest. "Oh, that's not true. You guys always got along when we came to visit you." Her father chuckles. "Well, look at that. He's actually capable of conveying humor. I never would have guessed."
"He was your boyfriend. I had no choice but to get along with him. Now he's not, so I don't have to pretend to like him anymore."
I cover up a laugh behind my napkin.
"Boy was too needy," Mr. Hayes continues. "I didn't like the way he looked at you."
"How did he look at me?" Allie asks warily.
"Like you were his entire world."
She frowns. "And that's a bad thing?"
"Damn right it is. Nobody should ever be someone else's entire world. That's not healthy. AJ, if your whole life is centered on one thing, one person, what you gonna be left if that one person goes away? Absolutely nothing."
He gruffly reiterates,
"Not healthy."
Joe Hayes has a very practical way of looking at things. I'm oddly impressed. "Well, now you're just making me feel bad for Sean. Let's change the subject. Dean, tell my dad about your last game."
I sigh ruefully. "Really? The one I got thrown out of?"
Her dad harumphs.
"Of course."
The conversation becomes strained again. I'm relieved when it's finally time to clear the table, eagerly standing up to help Allie gather the dishes. There's still half a turkey left in the serving platter, which Mr. Hayes reaches for as he staggers to his feet. "No, Dad," Allie says in a strict voice. "Go and watch the rest of the game. Dean and I can clean up."
"I'm not an invalid, AJ," he grumbles. "I'm perfectly capable of carrying one plate to the kitchen."
No sooner do the words exit his mouth than the platter wobbles in his hand. Or rather, his hand wobbles and the platter follows suit, abruptly slipping from his grip and smashing to the hardwood. The ceramic shatters to pieces, sending the slippery turkey careening across the floor. I immediately set down my plates and hurry around the table. Allie does the same, and our heads bump when we both reach for the same broken piece.
"God damn it," Mr. Hayes bites out. "I'll take care of the mess."
"No." Her tone isn't strict anymore. It's commanding. She snatches the ceramic shard from my hand and says, "Dean, would you take Dad to the living room and make sure he stays there?" Her father levels me with a death glare that makes my balls shrivel up. But no way am I facing Allie's wrath right now. Stifling a sigh, I lightly clasp Joe's arm and lead him out of the small dining room. The scowl stays fixed on his face even after he's settled on the couch.
"I could have cleaned it up myself," he informs me.
"I know," I shrug. "But I think we made the right call snicking out of there. For such a tiny little thing, your daughter sure is terrifying when she's trying to get her way." His lips curve ever so slightly. Holy shit, did I almost make him smile? But whatever shred of humor I might have induced disappears before I can blink. Mr. Hayes lowers his voice to a deadly pitch and asks,
"What do you want with AJ?"
A shift in confusion.
"I don't understand the question." "I see the way you look at her too."
His jaw begins to twitch. but I don't know if it's from anger or the disease he's battling.
You like her?
Of course I do, I say awkwardly. We're friends.
Don't feed me that bull. I've been alive a lot longer than you, pretty boy. You think I can't tell when a man is in lust?
And I thought the dinner conversation was uncomfortable.
I get it. AJ's a catch. She's smart, pretty like her mom. She's caring, too damn caring sometimes, he admits. If she loves you, she'll always put your needs ahead of hers.
And I know he's talking about his own relationship with Allie now. It's obvious that because of his MS, she puts his needs first, not to mention coddles him more than he likes.
She needs a man who will take care of her.
His voice goes soft for a moment, but then it sharpens.
You're not that man, kid. You're incapable of that.
Insult prickles my skin. Who is he to make that sort of judgment? He notices my frown and chuckles.
I was a hockey scout for more than 20 years. You think you're the first cocky SOB I've met in my life? Cockier, too, because you grew up with money. You already have that entitled sense of importance that comes after a player signs his first 7-figure contract.
I force my hands not to clench into fists.
Just because my family has money doesn't mean I'm a bad person, sir. I'm not saying that.
He shrugs.
But guys like you, you know nothing about real-world problems. And if shit does go wrong, you throw a little money at the problem and poof, all fixed.
Blue eyes, a shade darker than Allie's, sweep over me from head to toe.
You're not what she needs, Dean. You wouldn't step up and be there for her if it came down to it.
A pause.
I don't trust you to take care of my daughter.
With that final cutting remark, he shifts his gaze back to the football game.
Chapter 22. Dean.
Allie calls me at noon the next day with an update about her ETA. Hey, I'm in a taxi. I'll be there in 15 or 20, depending on traffic.
I just stepped out of the shower, so I'm in a towel as I stride past the floor-to-ceiling windows in my bedroom, balancing the phone on my shoulder.
Why didn't you take the train? Would have been faster.
I felt like treating myself to a cozy back seat instead of a cramped subway ride.
Right on.
Any special instructions for when I get there? What floor are you on?
I absently enter the walk-in closet and grab a pair of sweatpants off a shelf.
Just tell the concierge who you are and someone will bring you up. The elevator requires a key to get to the penthouse.
She sighs. You live in the penthouse of the Hayward Plaza Hotel?
Yep. I drop the towel on the polished hardwood. Hey, what do you think? Will that make your dad hate me less or hate me more?
Her laughter tickles my ear. Oh, shut up. He doesn't hate you.
Yeah, right. She'd be singing a different tune if she'd heard the shit he said to me in the living room last night. I don't trust you to take care of my daughter. Fuck. MS or not, the old man is still delivering blows that sting days later.
I shove the angering exchange out of my mind and say,
I'll see you soon.
Then I wander around my room collecting random items of clothing. The cleaning staff already tidied up the place this morning. They show up twice a week like clockwork, whether or not anyone is staying at the penthouse. But I have a mystifying habit of accumulating a mess even if I've been somewhere for only a couple hours. Our housekeeper, Vera, calls me the accidental slob. 20 minutes later, after the front desk buzzes to let me know my visitor has arrived, I head for the elevator that opens directly onto the living room. Only my prep school friends have visited me here before, and since their homes are equally luxurious, none of them have ever batted an eye when they came over. Allie bats an eye. The second she emerges from the elevator, her jaw is on the marble floor, and her eyebrows are higher than the 15-foot ceiling.
Sweet mother of Moses, she breathes.
Her odd gaze travels around the parlor, living room, and north-facing terrace before returning to me.
Okay, I demand a tour.
I offer a self-deprecating laugh.
It'll be a long tour, I warn her.
I don't care if it takes 5 hours. I want to see every inch of this place, Your Majesty.
As I show her around the penthouse, I find myself viewing it through her eyes. Every room we enter makes her gawk and gasp and curse in amazement. The walnut-paneled library, the modern chef's kitchen, the gym, the wine cellar.
Okay, I guess this place is a wee bit over the top.
Where are the bedrooms?
She looks confused when we wind up back in the living room and stop near the hand-carved mantelpiece of the massive fireplace.
Oh, that was just the first floor,
I say sheepishly.
This place has two floors?
I mumble. Three.
Three floors?
She stares at me as if I've just stepped off an alien spaceship. I think I want to punch you right now.
I think I want to punch myself.
I don't like this unwelcome pang of self-consciousness. Or rather, I don't like feeling like I'm the most overindulged prick on the planet. Allie's father's voice suddenly buzzes through my mind, disparaging and cold, mocking me about how I know nothing about real-world problems. Damn it, why am I letting that man get under my skin? So what if I grew up with money? I still know the meaning of struggle and hardship and... Fuck, who am I kidding? The life of Dean is pretty sweet, it always has been. But I can still empathize with people who've been less fortunate than I am. I can still step up and be there when someone fucking needs me. We climb the sweeping marble staircase and she stops to admire one of my mom's favorite abstract paintings. For all the pomp and circumstance of this place, my parents didn't go overboard with the decor. The penthouse has a clean, modern design, and most of the art on the walls is by no means expensive. Mom is all about supporting local artists.
Is your room on the second floor? Allie asks.
I shake my head. Master bedroom is down there. I point to the left. Guest rooms are there. I point to the right. You want to see any of those, or can we skip this floor?
We can skip it.
She's already bounding up the stairs again. I lead her into my bedroom. She admires every inch of the enormous room, from the custom-made oak bed to the built-in bookshelves to the wall of gleaming windows.
No curtains?
She sounds a bit dazed. Automatic shades, I admit, remote control operated.
Wow.
As she wanders around exploring, the sunlight flooding the room catches in her golden hair, which is loose around her shoulders. She studies the endless rows of titles on the bookshelf, then whirls toward me.
Okay, admit it.
Admit what? She points an accusing finger at me.
You're smart.
I snort loudly.
Of course I'm smart.
You sure as hell don't act like it.
Allie crosses her arms over the front of her loose striped sweater.
In fact, I feel like you go out of your way to make everyone believe you're a dummy. With your baby dolls and foul language and the way you throw ain't into a sentence every so often.
I flash her a grin. Nope, that's just how I fucking talk, baby doll. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Her eyes dance with amusement.
Uh-huh.
So how come you never talk about law school?
What's there to talk about? I'm not in law school yet. I sit on the edge of the bed that I hastily made right before she got here.
But aren't you excited about it?
She presses. Not really. At her frown, I chuckle softly. I'm sure I'll be excited when I'm there. I'm a live-in-the-moment kind of guy, remember? I pat the bedspread, then crook a finger at her. Get over here already, will you?
Give me one good reason why I should.
I slide my hand into my crotch and cup it. Little Dean is feeling ignored. Laughing, Allie climbs into my lap and rests her hands on the back of my neck. She brings her mouth close to mine.
Poor guy. Does he need an afternoon delight?
He's dying for it, I murmur. Our lips meet in a kiss at the same time I ease my hands under her shirt. I groan when her bare breasts fill my palms. I frickin' love it when she doesn't wear a bra. Makes it so much easier to lift up her shirt and pop one sweet nipple into my mouth.
Oh, she moans. That's nice.
About to get nicer, baby. I work my other hand between our bodies so I'm cupping her over her leggings. Fuck, we need to get these clothes off. Allie's gaze darts toward the windows.
Should we close the shades? Where's the remote?
I'm wholly focused on the delicious task of suckling her nipple, working my tongue over the hard bud.
Dean, she protests. We're pretty much in a glass box. What if there's someone with a telescope watching us from one of the other buildings?
Then they're gonna get a hell of a show.
I pinch both nipples and I'm rewarded with a throaty noise. Her objections die off as I lower her onto the mattress and proceed to peel every stitch of clothing off her body.
She pushes my sweatpants off my hips and I kick them away, and then we're naked and kissing and rolling around on my huge bed while we're both breathless. Cool if we save foreplay for later? I whisper against her neck before dragging my tongue back to her tits again.
Mm-hmm, just get inside me already,
she whispers back. I grab a condom and fit myself against her soaked pussy, thanking God and any other deities who care to hear my gratitude that Allie's as turned on as I am. Our sexual compatibility is off the charts. We both hiss out pleasure-laced breaths as I slide home.
Home?
I halt mid-thrust.
Don't stop.
Allie's husky command makes my balls tighten. I'm developing a Pavlovian response to her catalog of sounds. Breathy moans, raspy sighs, and I'm semi-hard, if not at full mast. Happy noises, laughs, and I'm grinning back. It's different.
She taps me on the shoulder impatiently.
Need some instruction? Because little Dean isn't all the way in yet. I muffle a chuckle against her luscious tits and thrust home.
There, I said it. Home.
This is sex, for Christ's sake. I don't need to overthink this, not with Allie. She wants me balls deep, fucking her mindless, and that's what I want, too.
Oh, he's in, baby. He's in so far and so hard you're gonna feel it for days.
I jack forward hard enough that she skitters halfway across the mattress. She braces her hands against the padded headboard and stares at me from under heavy-lidded eyes with a come-and-get-me look.
Yeah, she rocks my world,
and I'm going to return the favor. The walls of her pussy convulse around me, squeezing me in the most erotic hug ever invented. I fight off my orgasm. No way am I coming yet. I want to see those gorgeous eyes rolling back in her head. I want her mouth falling open and her face to take on that totally lost in the moment glazed expression she gets when she's so into the fucking that I know nothing is in her head but me. I push her hair back, tangling my fingers in the thick strands and tugging her head so I can kiss her properly. She attacks my tongue, sucking it into her mouth, letting me fuck her with it while I hammer her with my dick. We're both getting sweaty. Our slippery bodies move against each other in a perfect rhythm, one that makes me dizzy with excitement.
You feel so good, like a goddamn dream, I tell her through gritted teeth.
The effort not to come is testing my last bit of control.
Yes, there, fuck me right there, she cries,
punctuating her orders with claws in my shoulders. I brace myself, elbow near her head, knee digging into the mattress for leverage, and give her everything I've got. In measured, powerful strokes, I work her into a mindless state of pleasure until she's shaking and screaming her satisfaction into the empty rooms of this penthouse. She's still trembling when I flip her over and ram into her from behind. My balls slap against her thighs, and the tightness of her pussy from this angle nearly makes my eyes water from the pleasure. She makes these incredible sexy sounds that include the words Dean and Oh God and Yes until it's a strange sort of song. Her moans the melody, our bodies banging out the sex beat, our hearts getting mixed up in all of it until I'm the mindless one. All my senses are filled with her, her sounds, her smell, her touch, her. Bare ass pumping into her. I don't care if there's a telescope out there watching. Let them see how much I love being inside this girl. We spend the whole day in bed. Well, not just in bed. We also fuck in my enormous walk-in shower under the spray of four shower heads and multiple body jets. And I go down on her in the kitchen while she's sprawled on the marble counter. And she blows me in the game room. And we 69 in the private sauna. Did I mention this is the best day ever? By the time 9 o'clock rolls around, I'm legit spent, drained. There isn't a drop of semen left in my body. Allie Hayes sucked and fucked it all out of me.
You're a sex fiend, I grumble when I feel her hand stroking my thigh.
We just finished eating dinner, burgers and fries delivered by room service and consumed in bed. And now we're lying on my million thread count sheets, recovering from the most intense sex marathon I've had in a long time. Or ever.
I can't help it, Allie protests.
She sits up and I'm floored by how gorgeous she looks right now. Flushed cheeks, tousled hair, hazy eyes. The life of Dean gets me all hot and bothered. My phone rings and I groan in relief. Oh, thank Jesus. Hopefully whoever this is will save me before you break my dick. Turns out my savior is Beau, and I pick up with my usual, "What's shaking, Maxwell?"
"We are," Beau answers cheerfully. "As in, we're shaking our asses on the dance floor tonight."
Are you asking me to go out dancing with you? I pause. And shouldn't you be in Wisconsin with your grandmother right now?
Gram's bailed on us. Went on some senior's cruise instead of spending the holiday with her family. How dare she, right? That bitch.
Beau snickers, which I take as an indication that he's joking. If not, I feel bad for his grandmother.
Joanna and I are in the city with our folks. Let's meet up.
How do you know I'm in the city? I ask suspiciously. I have a Boston cell number, and I hadn't told him I was coming to Manhattan, so there's no reason for him to think I'm here.
I've got that friend finder app. Shows you where all your friends are at all times.
Awesome. I'm being stalked by one of my best buds.
We're going to a club in Soho. You down?
Hold on a sec. I cover the mouthpiece and look at Allie. Feel like going out? Beau and his sister are in town, and they're hitting up a nightclub. Reluctance creases her forehead. Beau, as in Breyer's quarterback? I know exactly what she's thinking, and I'm quick to squash her fears. He won't say anything if he sees us together. Seriously, Maxwell knows how to keep his mouth shut. After a very long beat of hesitation, she finally nods, a tiny smile lifting her lips.
I haven't been to a club in ages.
I lift my hand from the phone.
We're in.
We?
I'm bringing a friend. Nice. Meet you there in an hour.
Sounds good. I hang up to find Allie in distress.
What's wrong?
I didn't bring anything clubby to wear. She chews on her bottom lip. Can we stop in Brooklyn first so I can change, or is that too much of a hassle?
No need, I say, tugging her off the bed. You can borrow something from my sister. You're about summer size.
Are you sure she won't mind? Allie frets as I usher her across the hall into my sister's room. Some girls get super touchy about lending out their clothes.
Trust me, she won't care.
Allie's face fills with astonishment when we enter Summer's closet. And by closet, I mean the cavernous room that's almost the size of Allie's brownstone. How is this a closet? Allie exclaims. She moves forward and squeals, "Oh my God, she's got an entire wall of shoes. Now I want to punch your sister."
I chuckle. I wouldn't try it. Summer plays by schoolyard rules. She'll claw your eyes and rip your hair out.
Allie examines another rack overflowing with hangers. If I check any of these tags, am I going to see words like Prada and Kors and Lagerfeld?
Yep.
Then please distract me to the cheap section so your sister doesn't kill me if I spill something on her precious Versace.
Babe, you really need to trust me when I say she won't mind, or notice for that matter.
Summer left all this stuff behind when she went to Brown, I remind Allie. Not to mention all the clothes in her closet in Connecticut. Just pick whatever you'd like. Okay, then. Well, since I probably won't get the chance to wear a Valentino dress ever again, at least not until he custom designs my dress for the Oscars, that gets another laugh from me. I pick this one. She holds up a black lace mini dress with a gaping neckline, then glances at the shoe wall. And I'll pair it with, oh, are those Jimmy Choo's?
And that's my cue to leave, I announce. Come find me when you're ready.
I leave Allie to fawn over Summer's closet and go to my own room to get dressed, which takes all of 5 minutes. I throw on a gray sweater and the same trousers I wore last night, then lie in my bed watching YouTube videos on my phone while I wait for Allie. Somewhere at the 20-minute mark, she pops into the room in a blur of designer black, grabs a small makeup kit from her purse and disappears into my bathroom. Oh, hey, she calls a few minutes later. Her head pokes out from behind the doorway. My friend Dylan just texted. She got in last night and she wants to meet up. Her boyfriend's here too. Can I invite them to the club?
Sure, go ahead.
My phone buzzes and I shut off YouTube so I can access my messages.
Logan, just found the perfect Xmas present for you in Boston.
A photo promptly appears
summoning a loud groan from my throat. The asshole sent me a pic of a novelty My Little Pony dildo. Damn thing is bright pink with rainbow sparkles on the handle. Logan, and it's rechargeable. You don't have to buy batteries. That's handy. Me, hardy har har, you equals comedian. Then I message Grace. Tell your BF to stop being mean to me. She texts back a smiley face. Traitor. I'm ready. My head snaps up, and holy hell, I forget how to breathe for a moment. Man, she should consider ditching acting and become a makeup artist because this girl has the ability to completely transform depending on what she does to her face. Just when I got used to thinking of her as the girl next door type, with her subtle makeup and shiny lip glosses, she suddenly showed up at Malone's looking like a wet dream come to life, with big smoky eyes and pouty crimson lips. Tonight, it's a combination of the two. Natural with a splash of glamour, nude lips, shimmery gold eyeshadow, and mascara that makes her lashes appear impossibly long. How do I look? She plants a hand on her hip and does a sexy pose. Ridiculously fuckable. I hop off the bed and zero in on her, drawing her body toward mine as I bend down to give her a quick kiss. Her scent fills my nostrils. I breathe deeply, trying to identify it. Strawberries? Mangoes? Roses? I can't figure it out, but it's goddamn addictive. What is it? I'm startled to find her frowning at me. What do you mean? Her frown deepens.
You were staring at me.
I was? Shit. I hadn't even realized it. Sorry, I must have spaced out. I paced on a careless smile, doing my best to ignore the weird flutter in my stomach, and the funny little shiver racing up my spine, and the way my chest somehow feels both tight and light at the same time, which is as perplexing as Allie's unnameable scent. Swallowing, I force myself to ignore the paradox in my chest and follow Allie's sexy ass out the door.
23. Allie. I'm nervous about Beau Maxwell's reaction to me and Dean showing up together, but it turns out to be unnecessary. Beau doesn't even blink when Dean introduces me as G's GF's BFF. Maybe all the letters Dean threw out confused him. Either way, he just seems thrilled that we came out to the club at all. Beau's sister, Joanna, is equally overjoyed, throwing her arms around Dean. De Laurentiis, oh, thank God you're here. You don't understand how close I've come to killing my idiot brother these past couple days. Nah, you don't want to kill me, Beau says with a broad grin. You love your little brother and you know it. Joanna gives him the finger, but she's grinning too. She's as attractive as Beau, tall and statuesque with sparkling blue eyes and dark hair.